one piece of advice that I would give people who are interested in the Foreign Service, do not rule yourself out. And I think a lot of people do that. People who know about our careers, they kind of psych themselves out because they have a vision in their head of what is a diplomat, or what a diplomat looks like, or what a diplomat sounds like, or where they come from. So do not rule yourself out. You belong in the Foreign Service.
Welcome to the Global Minnesota Podcast, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesota with the world. Our mission is to advance international understanding and engagement in every corner of the state. We do this with a variety of programs, including our public events, K-12 education programs, Great Decisions discussion groups, and professional exchanges. To learn more, visit our website at globalminnesota.org. I'm Nicholas Hayen, Marketing and Communications Manager for Global Minnesota. The U.S. Department of State has the honor of representing the American people to the world. Whether at missions abroad, at our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., or satellite offices around the country, the State Department has a growing number of career tracks and entry points for a variety of professionals. Some key individuals who can help us understand these opportunities and demystify the federal government hiring process are diplomats in residence. The Diplomat in Residence program provides access to Foreign Service officers and specialists who provide guidance and advice on careers, internships, and fellowships to students and professionals in the communities they serve. Diplomats in residence are available to answer questions and share insight with those interested in foreign and civil service careers, internships, and fellowships. On today's episode, we are honored to speak with the current diplomat in residence for the Midwest region, Susan Falatko. She is a career Foreign Service officer with diplomatic postings in Slovenia, Mauritius, Rwanda, Switzerland, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Cuba, and Mali. Her latest post prior to becoming a diplomat in residence was as the Deputy Chief of Mission in Slovenia. She joins us today to talk about her time in the Foreign Service, the Diplomat in Residence program, and how to get a job in the foreign or civil service. Susan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So first, why don't you tell us just a bit more about yourself and your time in the Foreign Service?
Sure. So I am from the Midwest. I'm from the Chicago area myself. And I've been in for 25 years. I just had my 25th anniversary a couple of weeks ago. I am an economic officer, and we'll talk about that a little bit, what that means. There are several different kind of flavors of diplomats, if you will. And when you come in, we have a certain rank, kind of like in the military. You come in kind of at an entry level, and throughout your career, you're going to progress through different levels. As an economic officer, I've obviously did several economic tours, and I know we just mentioned some of the places that I've been, but everybody also does a consular tour in one of your first few tours, and that is basically where we're helping American citizens. We are issuing visas to foreigners, so I've done a consular tour. I did several economic tours. Eventually, I also did a tour. We also welcome people who are doing assignments outside of their career track. So I've also done a public diplomacy tour, and we can talk all about those different kinds of career tracks. But so I've seen a lot of the different aspects of the Foreign Service in my career. And then eventually I became a deputy chief of mission, and that's essentially the deputy ambassador, and I've done that twice. So in, you know, over 25 years, 7 countries, essentially 4 different kinds of jobs, really. It's just, I think what I love the most about the Foreign Service is that it's always changing and you're always learning something new and doing something new. And if you're the kind of person who loves a challenge and doing things like that, this is the job for you.
Yeah, it sounds like you have quite a breadth of experience there. I'm wondering kind of what was one of the most like unusual or interesting experiences you had while representing the United States around the world?
You know, it's hard to pick one. We find ourselves in interesting situations quite a bit. But I always say that I think consular officers have the best stories. And I think part of that is because they make a real difference in people's lives that affect people individually. And my story is from my first assignment. I was in West Africa in a country called Mali. And back then, you know, this is 25 years ago, it had a democratically elected government. It was actually very safe. It was a great place to do a first tour. But I was the consular officer there. I was the only one. And we do something called welfare and whereabouts, where an American citizen or a friend or a family member can call an embassy and say, you know, I had a daughter, a son, a friend. They were traveling in that country and we haven't heard from them and we don't know what happened to them. And so we can kind of try and track them down and make sure that they're safe. I got a welfare and whereabouts call in Mali from a school in New York City. And they said, you know, we have these four Malian students aging from 12 down to, I think the youngest was about six. And their parents were legal permanent residents of the United States. They were green card holders, but not yet citizens. Four kids were born in the States, so they're American citizens. The father had recently died. And so the mother had taken the kids back to Mali for the funeral. And then they never came back. And so when the kids didn't come back to school, the administrators got worried, you know, what happened to these kids? So they asked us to look into them and see what happened. And it turns out we were able to track them down in the mother's village. And what happened was when she got back, the husband's brother looked at the family and said, well, you know, my brother has died. And so now you are my family, and would not let them leave. And so, you know, we're talking about a 12-year-old kid who's grown up in New York, suddenly in this little village in Mali. And so there really wasn't anything we could do until one day they came in to get their American citizen passports renewed because the four kids were American citizens. And at that point, I was able to take the mother aside and say, what do you want to do? And she said, we want to go home. We want to go back. And the State Department has mechanisms where we could get a loan to get them on an airplane and get them back to the States. We had to do this kind of under the radar because the family didn't want them to leave. So we were actually able to get them on a plane without any of their luggage because they didn't want to give away that they were leaving. And we got them out. I went to the airport with them and held the two of the kids' hands, and the mom was holding two of the kids' hands, and we put them on a plane. And that's the kind of thing that we get to do as Foreign Service officers. Like, we made a real change in somebody's life. And that's just one story, but you think this happens all the time, all over the world, where we can really make a difference. And I think that's another thing that I just love about this career.
Yeah, that's what's really incredible is people tend to think of the State Department and, you know, these missions and embassies abroad as just dealing with kind of the high level diplomat to diplomat things. But that story really highlights just how much you are working to protect American citizens abroad and to help with their interests and their problems while they're living or traveling abroad.
And absolutely, that is our primary mission. In fact, you know, people say, why do we have embassies? And it's because we are ultimately, the mission is to ensure the safety and the security and the prosperity as well of Americans. And we do that by working with allies, working with countries that we're not friendly with, but we're doing this to forward the interests of Americans.
So for someone who wants to work in one of those embassies, what is this diplomat in residence program and what are some of the main opportunities that you want people to be aware of?
Yes. So the Diplomat in Residence program, there are 17 of us right now. We are located around the United States. We each cover a particular region. I'm in the Midwest, so I have Illinois, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And we are here to really ensure that we are recruiting from across the country to make sure that we are not all coming from the same place or the same schools. We want to make sure that our diplomatic corps is reflective of who we are as a country. So we are present, we each have a host institution. Mine happens to be the University of Illinois Chicago. And people, if you're from Minnesota, I am your diplomat in residence. You can reach out to your diplomats in residence. We are located, you can find us on our careers website. And this is important. I want to make sure everyone remembers this because I'm going to throw a lot of information out today. But our careers website is careers.state.gov. So that's careers.state.gov. We have a page that has a map on it that shows how we're divided up as diplomats in residence. You can get, you know, click on your region. You can get contact information. You can email us directly. We all have direct contact with people who are interested in our careers, in our internships, and in our fellowships. We all have LinkedIn pages under, you know, Diplomat in Residence Midwest or Diplomat in Residence North Central. So they can connect directly with us and ask us questions. You know, we can help them kind of demystify the processes for getting into the State Department for internships and fellowships. So they should not hesitate. If anyone is interested, definitely reach out to your diplomat in residence, because we are a resource and we are here for you. That is our function.
Yeah, so you mentioned there's paid internships. I think you also discussed graduate school fellowships at one point.
Yes. So we started paying our interns, which is really a game changer. I'm so glad we did this, because it really helps us bring in people from across the country. And that is something that was more difficult for people. Obviously, that was a barrier for people who couldn't get themselves to Washington or pay for housing. So we have paid internships. They're 10 weeks long. We have summer, spring, and fall cohorts. They are in Washington, D.C. at the State Department or at an embassy overseas. We will pay for travel and housing, and we pay you. These are paid internships. It's at the GS-4 level. That's the government salary scale, which right now is about $18 an hour. So we want to make sure that anybody can do these internships, and that, you know, we've eliminated the barriers. I have to say, 27-ish years ago, when I was in grad school, I was offered a State Department internship and I had to turn it down because it was unpaid. So I'm really glad that we are now able to give this opportunity to anyone who wants to do it. That makes it competitive, of course, but you know, you can't get one if you don't apply. So I really encourage people to look into this. More information on our internships, again, is on careers.state.gov. We also have fellowships. Let us pay for your graduate school and then give you a job. We have several different graduate school fellowships. We have two, the Pickering and the Wrangell. These will pay up to $42,000 per year of grad school in an international relations related field, which you can argue is almost anything, you know, something that has that is related to international affairs. We will also pay for an MBA on this because we need management officers. And I want to talk about that a little bit as well. But yeah, so we will pay for graduate school, and upon successful completion, you will receive an appointment as a Foreign Service officer in the State Department. We have an IT fellowship, similar. It'll pay up to $42,000 per year for graduate school. This one will also pay for junior and senior year of undergrad instead of graduate school. So if we have any, you know, freshmen and sophomores out there in IT, and then upon successful completion, we will give you a career as a diplomatic technology officer, because we need IT folks in the State Department. They serve overseas, they serve at our embassies, you know, running our networks. And we have a hard time attracting people. So that's what this, it's called the Foreign Affairs IT Fellowship. Again, it's on careers.state.gov. And then finally, we have a new fellowship called the Clark Fellowship. And this is for diplomatic security. So we have an entire diplomatic security service. This is a federal law enforcement branch of the State Department. They are responsible for serving overseas with us and ensuring the safety and security of our facilities, our personnel, and our information. So we will pay for graduate school in any field, and then upon successful completion, give you an appointment as a diplomatic security special agent. So those are the different kinds of fellowships we have. There is a service commitment if we pay for graduate school. It's either 3 or 5 years, depending on the fellowship. But yeah, like I said, let us pay for graduate school and then give you a job.
I mean, that's an incredible deal. I certainly would have wished that I knew about those programs about 10 or 15 years ago.
Me too.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, and a really great way to, as you said, make these more accessible to everyone, because so many people are looking at that thinking, well, I couldn't possibly take just an unpaid internship. So that's a really great way to break down that barrier to accessibility.
Exactly. Yep.
So tell us then about career opportunities at the State Department. You know, what are the needs and how can people apply?
Yes. So we have foreign service careers, which are the ones where you serve overseas. We also have civil service, which are domestic, typically in Washington, D.C. But if we're talking about foreign service, I'll start with that. We have what is known colloquially as the foreign service officer. It's actually, we call it the foreign service generalist. This is where we have the five different career tracks. This is where you could be a political officer or an economic officer, which is what I am. You know, and these are the people that are out and they are building relationships. They're talking to people overseas. They're kind of like the eyes and ears of Washington overseas, and they are providing input to policy discussions in Washington. They are, you know, they're supposed to know who's who. They're essentially analysts. We are not policymakers ourselves, but we are part of that policy discussion by providing input to Washington. So that's political and economic. We have a public diplomacy career track, and these are the folks that are the public face of the embassy. They're responsible for telling America's story to foreign publics. So they work with the press, but they also work with, you know, directly with the public. They have a huge toolkit of these great things they can do. They can do cultural exchanges, you know, musical groups and sports figures, and they have professional exchanges, educational exchanges, but it's all about building that mutual understanding between a foreign public and Americans. We have the consular career track, as I mentioned before. That's where you get to help Americans. You help issue visas to foreigners who want to come to the States. And then I want to spend just a moment. We have another career track that I think people don't think of when they think about the Foreign Service. We hire management officers. And these are folks, you know, we have some 270 some facilities around the world. We need people to manage them. So these folks are going to oversee human resources and financial management, budget, procurement, logistics. These people are the problem solvers of the embassy. You know, if you want to, if you like problem solving, and this is the kind of thing, this is the place to be, because management officers are working with two different labor laws. You have your U.S. staff and you have your local staff. They're working in two different currencies, you know, U.S. dollars and whatever the local currency is. Anything that happens, you know, procurement logistics, there are all kinds of government procurement rules. So management officers are critical. And we have a deficit in them right now. So if anyone is out there, we are going to train you in all of these different facets of management. It's an entry-level position. You know, we're really looking for people. And again, if anybody has questions, please reach out to your diplomat in residence. We have specialist foreign service tracks. These are things like our diplomatic security, our IT. We hire health professionals, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, doctors, psychiatrists, lab techs. And this is because we often serve in countries where the healthcare isn't what we would expect. And so we'll bring our own medical staff with us. A lot of embassies will have a health unit staffed by an American that will be essentially the primary care provider for the Americans and their families at post. We do hire different administrative specialists. So for example, human resources, financial management, logistics. The difference between the specialists and the generalists, the specialists have to have already specialized training, perhaps a degree or work experience in whatever it is, human resources or financial management. They're always going to do human resources or financial management, whatever we hire them for. The generalist is going to learn all of those different functions and ultimately oversee them. So the management officer is really an entry-level position where we'll train you. The specialist positions, you have to have some training already or experience to come in. So all of that is foreign service. These people are going to spend much of their career overseas. They might come back to Washington for an assignment or two, but most of it's overseas. We also hire civil service. So let's say you are an expert in China and you speak Chinese or China, you know, China policy. You could join the Foreign Service and we'll probably send you to China, especially if you have the language, but then we'll probably send you somewhere else, because we are considered generalists. We're going to send you to different postings every couple of years. You're going to move postings. But if you know that you want to focus on China or just China policy, you could look for a policy job in the civil service. Typically, you know, we have a China office. When they need an expert, they're going to put out a vacancy announcement on usajobs.gov. So it's a little bit different. We didn't talk about the hiring in the Foreign Service yet, but I'll get to that. But most Foreign Service, both generalists and specialists, You come in via a test. You come in as a class. Civil service, you have to look for the specific job that you're interested in. If you have a policy expertise, or if you like the idea of working in foreign affairs, but you don't want to go overseas, you're going to look on usajobs.gov for a domestic job in the State Department. And we hire for many different categories. There are management positions, there are policy positions, there are public diplomacy positions that are domestic, and then you would stay domestic. But those are all done through USA Jobs. Foreign service, if you want to come in as a generalist, you register for a test that is offered 3 times a year. It's called the Foreign Service Officer Test, the FSOT, and it's offered every June, October, and February. So the next one's coming up in June. It's a really broad test because, like I said, for the Foreign Service generalists, we're looking for people who are intellectually curious and just have a broad general knowledge of the world. We hire any major for any of those 5 generalist categories because we're not looking for your specific expertise in political science or economics. We're looking for people who are just intellectually curious. So all 5 of those career tracks, political, economic, public diplomacy, consular, and management, you all take the same test because it covers a lot of different things. You know, it's going to cover a little bit of politics, a little bit of history, economics, but it's also going to cover culture, science, and technology. So it's kind of a little bit of everything. And that's that looking for these people who are just, you know, very broadly educated. Specialists also come in through a test. Their testing is going to be obviously very specific to the specialization, and their dates are different. So it depends on what the specialty is. Some of them are open all the time. Diplomatic security and IT, you can register, you can go online today and register for those tests if you want to come in as diplomatic security or a diplomatic technology officer. Some of the other ones, like human resources, those are only offered a few times a year. You can watch on careers.state.gov. We have a section where everything that's open right now, there's an apply now section. So you can see what's available now and you can bookmark that and come back and see when they're open. So basically, foreign service, both generalists and specialists come in through a test. Civil service, you have to search for the right job, the exact job that you're looking for, and you apply via a vacancy announcement on usajobs.gov. The test used to be pass-fail. You had to get a certain score, and if you didn't clear that barrier, you didn't move forward. Now, you know, we know that there are people who test well. We were hiring really smart people who test well, but who didn't bring the skills that we were looking for. So now it's a two-part process. We're looking for certain skills that we call the dimensions. They're, again, on careers.state.gov. But they're things like critical thinking and cultural adaptability. These are the things that we want to know that people bring to the table when they come to us, because, you know, some of these things are hard to train. So when you register for the test, for the Foreign Service Officer test, you also have to fill out this application with personal narratives. And that's where you need to be telling us how you have these skills. You know, tell us a story about how you demonstrate them, because now it's going to be a combination of those skills and the test. So what we're seeing is that some people who might not have the test scores might not be as high, they're still being invited to the next stage because they have the skills we're looking for.
I see. So another way to make it more accessible.
Yes, exactly. And again, this is all on our website because I know it's a lot.
So we've kind of dispelled with one misperception, the idea that, you know, you have to be this foreign policy wonk who knows everything about everything in the world. You don't necessarily have to do that in order to get started with this process. What are some of the other common misperceptions about the process of landing a job at the State Department that you found?
Yeah, well, you know, what you just said about, I think that is one of the biggest, that you have to be studying political science. You know, if you think about issues that are global, you look at things like we do global health, we do environment issues, we do science and technology issues. We've got somebody right now, I was talking to a professor at one of the schools I cover, And he said, oh, I have a friend who's at the State Department right now who's actually a physicist. And he's working at the State Department because, if you've heard of the Artemis program, this is a program the United States is going to put people on the moon again. But we're not doing it alone this time. So we're looking for kind of a global coalition to help us put people on the moon again. And that's part of it. There's an international component to this. And in fact, it's funny because when I was in Slovenia, my last post, one of our jobs was to try and get the Slovenes on board to join the Artemis program. So we need STEM majors. We're talking about AI. We talk things like data privacy. We do environment and climate change. Who's out there doing the climate talks? It's diplomats a lot of times. We do wildlife trafficking. So we're looking for people. Yeah, we're looking for all kinds of diversity, geographic diversity, but all kinds, because we cannot be effective as diplomats if we, as a diplomatic corps, are not truly representative of who we are as a country.
Yeah, and there's also age diversity, isn't there? Didn't I hear what the average age of an incoming Foreign Service officer is? I mean, it's not just for, students and grad students anymore, is it?
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yes. We have a lot of second career, third career folks. I think the average age over the last year or so is about mid-30s of our class, because we bring people in as an or into an orientation class. I think the average age was somewhere around 35-ish. So that means we're hiring people right out of school, we're hiring people out of a master's program, but we're also hiring people who are changing careers. And we welcome that because you bring expertise from, that you don't have right out of school. So we absolutely welcome that as well. And for a lot of our positions, for most of the Foreign Service positions, we'll hire you up until your 60th birthday. The
Wow.
exception to that is diplomatic security, because it's a law enforcement position that is up till 37.
On that point, what advice would you have for people who are curious then about State Department careers? Like, what's the first step that they can take?
Well, definitely visit careers.state.gov. We have a lot of information on there, but we've posted videos. We're doing a lot more webinars. I know people don't want to sit through an hour-long webinar, but they're there. If We've done webinars on the different career tracks. So we've put together panels of public diplomacy officers and economic officers and kind of walked through what is their day like, what have their assignments been like. But there's a lot of resources like that. Definitely connect with your diplomat in residence. So the next Foreign Service Officer test will be in June of this year. The registration is going to open on April 15th. So you've got time to do those personal narratives where you're going to tell us about the skills that you have. Be thoughtful about those. Those are really important. They're just as important as the test. So make sure if you're going to register for the test that you're doing a good job on those personal narratives. One piece of advice that I would give people who are interested in the Foreign Service: do not rule yourself out. And I think a lot of people do that. People who know about our careers, they kind of psych themselves out because they have a vision in their head of what is a diplomat, or what a diplomat looks like, or what a diplomat sounds like, or where they come from. Like I said, that is not the case. We are trying to ensure that we represent the United States, and we can only do that if we have people from across the country, from all walks of life, and all our wonderful diversity joining the Foreign Service. So do not rule yourself out. You belong in the Foreign Service.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who might look at their situation and go, "Oh, well, I'm too old," or "Oh, I have kids and a family and it's just not feasible." But it sounds like there are options for people of all walks of life and all backgrounds here in the Foreign Service and the Civil Service.
We bring our families with us. So I joined when I was single. I did two assignments overseas when I was single. Came back to the States to do a Washington assignment and met my husband. And I think what I had going for me is he had no idea what he was getting himself into. But we got married, he came overseas, and he turns out to love it. And we've raised two kids in the Foreign Service. So it's just been a really, really great life.
So then, how can people connect with you or with their local diplomat in residence to learn more and to kind of get started on this path?
If you're from Minnesota or you're in Minnesota, you can connect directly to me. On careers.state.gov, there is a tab at the top that says connect with a diplomat. It'll pull up a map where you can find us all. My email is on there. I mean, I can give it now if anyone has a pen, but it's dirmidwest@state.gov. You know, DIR standing for diplomat in residence. But it's on the website. Connect with us on LinkedIn. We're going to post all of our opportunities. And then we also have a talent network. If you go to our website and you go on our page on your diplomat in residence, it will say, you know, sign up for my talent network. This is great because we each send out a newsletter every month. We'll say, look, this is what jobs are open this month, you know, because some of those specialist jobs only open up a couple of times a year. So we'll let you know when certain careers are open. We'll let you know deadlines for internships and fellowships. But joining that talent network is important because then we can stay in touch with you and make sure that you don't miss any opportunities.
Great. Well, Susan, thank you so much for joining and for all of your work to help recruit the next generation and not just the next generation, the current generation and future generations into the Foreign Service.
Yeah, no, I welcome. I hope some of you reach out to me. I would love to. I do one-on-one advising. I can do online advising and I travel. That's the other thing I put in my newsletter. I don't know about other diplomats and residents, but in my newsletter, I usually will tell you where I'm traveling this month. So if I'm in your town, you can even come have a one-on-one in person with me.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks again to Susan Falatko for joining and for her work to represent the United States all over the world. Thanks as always to all the members of Global Minnesota who make our programs possible. Be sure to check out our website at globalminnesota.org to find information about upcoming events, learn more about our international programs, and sign up for our weekly newsletters. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already so you can hear untold stories of international connections each month and catch recordings of our public events. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.